Who are they? That is, these rulers of ours posing as representatives. Who really are these people in positions of power who rule us? Where do they come from? And why? Why did they seek to become politicians? And what? What exactly is their agenda? And what do they really, honestly, and truthfully, that's probably an oxymoron, what do they honestly and truthfully intend to accomplish? When an ordinary citizen like you and me runs for office, what do they believe? What exactly, truthfully and clearly, you know, transparency, what clearly does any candidate believe? Do you know that? Do you really know what Obama truly and honestly believes? I don't. For after all, every individual, including you and me, whether or not we run for public office, we have personal bias, as do all politicians. We have our very own set of values and beliefs, and we have our hypocrisies. We do indeed. We set goals and standards, and we strive to meet them. But inevitably, in certain areas, we fall short, as certainly do they, the politicians. The question is whether or not we are accountable for our shortcomings, and whether or not we strive to correct them or accept them and even develop habitual patterns around them. That's the problem. In short, I suppose, we correct our mistakes or we become what they are. Each of us is partisan. Each of us is political. We have preferences and even absolutes. Each of us has a certain philosophy, however well articulated, but it drives our lives day to day, however much we are conscious of both prejudices and philosophic biases. Often, more than not, we're not really conscious of them. And so we often represent ourselves as one thing to others when, in fact, we are something else, or at least we act that way. And so it is with a politician, or one who would strive to be so. Every politician or candidate to be one comes to the political arena good and bad, moral and immoral, transparent and deceitful at the same time. Constitutional and law-abiding, or independent and indifferent, determined to represent us, or once in power, to rule us. You can look at politicians face-to-face and in person, or vicariously through pictures, video, and you can almost sense who they are and what they believe, no matter what they say or do. The bottom line is that we are ruled by politicians who, at least to some extent, disrespect us. And they disregard us. We, the people who elected them. Don't you feel the same way? Why do ordinary citizens run for political office? Perhaps there are two general reasons why, among many others. But first, candidates do so in the hunt for power. Power. It is enormously ego-boosting to exercise power over others. It is self-structuring, ego-fulfilling, to make final political decisions, to order people about, to control and require word and conduct from others. Nothing feeds the ego so well. So often, as the old saying goes, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Once caught up in the power vortex, it is almost impossible to exit. Once political, once in power, political power becomes a way of life, often all of life. There are those who will do anything, anything to get it and do even more to keep it. Those who seek or have power come from a political base, a support structure. They curry the favor and goodwill of others, particularly the wealthy and the influential. As such, these would-be politicians have a price to pay. That is, they are beholden to contributors and supporters. They owe. There is a political debt to pay. Candidates may seek the support of a wealthy business community, and as such, they owe business or particular kinds of business. They owe them. Others may seek the support of unions or trial lawyers, both in terms of money and influence, and consequently, the candidate, when elected, is fully beholden to those unions. And they will vote the union way, no matter what, no matter what their conscience may dictate or what they represented to the people who elected them. The greater the support in money, in time, in effort, and expertise, the greater the bias, and consequently the candidate cannot be objective, just cannot be objective. Even the Constitution and the rule of law can be ignored or interpreted away as these special interests are pursued. In that sense, the candidate is above the law, or at least indifferent to it. There is a certain immunity which exists at the political level, a very, very large immunity, especially with regard to federal politics. And unless conduct is egregious and overtly illegal, seldom is there prosecution or accountability for that candidate or politician and his or her actions, which would be criminal for the ordinary citizen. Don't you agree? Politicians get away with virtually anything and without accountability. So many politicians are ready to deny and delay and obfuscate or litigate, that is, to do anything to retain the political power and to protect the person behind it. Virtually anything goes in the realm of politics, which is built on compromise and forged by combinations of half-truths, disinformation, and what is required at the time. It's the truth du jour, the lie. That is, something which is not the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, is commonplace in politics. It is almost as though to be elected is to be vested with a license to lie. A harsh and aggressive statement, but I believe it to be true. What do you think? Politicians often lie bald-faced, with knowledge and even malice aforethought. They do so perhaps knowing they will get away with a lie and will never face real accountability. Politicians are masters at utilizing some little part of the truth, creating impressions therefrom, all the while ignoring all other facts which are contrary and which form the real basis of the truth. Don't you believe that? Haven't you heard that? Aren't you disgusted by that? Politicians spin. That is, they interpret. They circumvent or otherwise avoid the truth. When there is no way any kind of lie or deceit will work, politicians can resort to the Fifth Amendment. Don't you love that? The Fifth Amendment, refusing to answer on the basis of the possibility of self-incrimination. Boy, that's the truth. Perhaps that is the ultimate non-verbal admission of political guilt, don't you think? Politicians often make the statement, lawyer-like, that they will neither deny nor confirm the issue at hand. In short, they are saying that any accusation may or may not be true, no matter what they know. Politicians can mislead by omission or by circumvention, and often they talk around the issue and they refuse to deal with hard questions if, in fact, they are even confronted. The media today very, very seldom ever confronts. They are victims, they often say, these politicians. They are victims of the political process, subject to change, out of control. In so many ways, they are out of control, they say, and they are forced as politicians to get things done through compromise, no matter their moral standards. I find that hard to believe, and I find that unacceptable. Politicians are wont to say what appears to be right in public and to the public, and then, in fact, engage in political action and conduct which is exactly the opposite. Of course, all such political hypocrisy is often covered up, and it's concealed from the public and protected by the political shell, especially when there may be fraud, scandal, or conduct which is unconstitutional, boy, there's a lot of that, or against the rule of law. Often, well-intentioned and morally sufficient people run for office, but invariably when elected, they become politically corrupted or tarnished or compromised. And they become in time different, particularly under the influence of power. In Washington, D.C., insiders refer to a disease known as Potomac fever. Potomac fever. Candidates and officials become infected by political power and prestige and influence and image, which influences and demands, like an addiction, the best of their life for the rest of their life. It demands that. It's a requirement for one to be a successful and influential politician, no matter what we the people want or think. When a candidate runs for office, we ask who they are and what they believe. We ask the same when they are elected. We ask the same as they exercise political power. And if truth be told, the answers to those critical and ultimate questions change as the political career develops. Perhaps an innocent citizen, morally naive, when beginning to pursue political office, may wish to do right, the right thing, but inevitably becomes overwhelmed by the political process of compromise. One can follow the careers of any career politician and see the changes, like Harry Reid. More often than not, those changes are not for the better. Our founding fathers envisioned, as our Constitution and related documents were formed, citizens turned candidates, turned politicians, serving their country and their fellow citizens for a short, I repeat, short period of time, and then returning home and to regular life. But that seldom happens in this political day and age. Power corrupts, and political power, especially in Washington, is addictive. Addictive. So often power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Your fellow citizen, whom you thought you knew, all of a sudden is over you. The person or even friend you once knew has the power to make decisions you cannot make. Consequently, the citizen-turned-politician often thinks of him or herself as better than you. Don't you feel that way? Perhaps even smarter than you. Certainly more intelligent, that is, in a political sense, with a better understanding of the issues and the necessary decision-making, qualities you don't have. That may consequently lead to little or no respect for you, for all of us, for we the people, the citizens. One can so easily tell those politicians who really have little or no respect for the citizenry and the electorate of this great country. Once in office, with the right to exercise power, there is really nothing you, the ordinary citizen, can do to effectuate your desires or to influence their decisions. Don't you feel that? Once they are in office, they send you form letters and ask for money, but do they really care what you think? They do what they want, as they see it, and all of that from day one. Such politicians may seek out others of their own kind, find support for certain causes and beliefs, but inevitably sink deeper into the political morass of compromise. They are often grown and matured as politicians with appointments and power positions, depending upon their willingness to play the game. If these politicians are new to the game, they must earn their stripes like rookies. For there is a pecking order in Congress. There are learning curves and the necessity to show a willingness to play the political game by the political rules. If you're a Democrat, be like the Democrats no matter what you think or feel. No politician at any level can advance further in the political realm without playing the political game as is and by the game's very own rules. And the fundamental principles underlying the political game and the rules are power. Power and money. Power and money. Politics demands response and even obeisance to the rules of money and power brokering. The underlying power structures, political to the core, are intent upon controlling the political processes and making certain only the right candidates, who play by the rules, seek and are elected to office. Play by those rules or get out of the game. Get out of the game. That is why it is so very difficult for a third party or any independent candidate for office to gain traction or be taken seriously at the political level. there are so many obstacles and roadblocks and preconditions which make it almost impossible for a truly right-thinking, independent candidate to run for office. What a shame for our democracy. And inevitably, that candidate runs into the power structure at work. And without that financial and political support and clout, it is almost impossible to be elected. The great philosopher Plato stated that unless you and I, right-thinking citizens, unless we run for office and govern, we inevitably will be ruled by inferior men and women. Inferior men and women. Amen. And how true that is today. Statesmen of old, men and women who saw it as a privilege to represent their fellow citizens, those with the highest possible moral standards and respect for the rule of law, seldom run for office because of the negative effects of the political processes, or really cannot be elected because they will not be corrupted. They won't give in. They won't play by the corrupt rules. They won't be corrupted by the money and power which drives the political process. And so we are so often left with politicians, elected officials who are in fact inferior, as Plato well said. True politicians who play well the political game for power and money, and with prejudice and bias, political and philosophic preferences at work, driving agendas whether or not they represent what the majority of American citizens would want. In that sense, there really is no democracy at work, not in our country and not today. The people in the majority almost never rule or have their way. We become a nation split, supposedly diversified, but really fractured, broken up into philosophic camps, arguing, fighting, angry at each other with absolutely little or no dialogue or true debate. Any discussion of issues often turns to attack, angry attack, and the rational debate of old is long gone. It's a matter of right or wrong, and you, the other, are almost always wrong. The educational process fosters deep divides and encourages strong political points of view, which can never be changed or influenced by the process of debate and discussion. Why? Because there is none. Dialogue in America is long gone because of the way the political process works, and with that, there is the constant warfare between the various components of federalism. The federal government seeks dominance over the states. The states seek to foster their own interest, all 50 of them, whether with differences from other states or in reaction or resistance to the federal government. Local governments constantly battle state governments, and even the federal government, if in fact they are negatively influenced. Battle after political after financial battle. There is political warfare everywhere. Our country is constantly under political tension. Tension and anger and uncertainty. Uncertainty, which results in fear and lack of confidence and often despair. Despair on the part of the citizenry. No matter, the political process goes on and wreaks havoc, not only nationally, but globally. One of the solutions to this morass, often proposed, is a limitation on the time and the terms which can be served by politicians. Don't you agree that should be a viable solution? So many political pundits feel that the only real solution to the problem is term limits. We can, if we wish, vote out congresspersons from the House of Representatives every 2 years. Many think those representatives should be limited to no more than 6 terms or 12 years of service. Wow, in my view, that's more than enough. The Senate, on the other hand, stays in power for 6 years. Such a long time. Many think senators should be limited to two terms maximum, or a total of 12 years. It took a constitutional amendment to limit the terms of a president to 8 years, or 2 terms, and no more. and perhaps a total of 8 years for any politician would be sufficient, no matter the title or office. In any event, if politicians can pursue office for the rest of their lives, career politicians, truly making politics a career, there really is no hope for change. No real way the average American citizen can create strong political influence and participate in or control the actions of what should be truly representatives rather than rulers.